You are listening to the audio preaching podcast from North Valley Baptist Church in Santa Clara, California, led by Pastor Jack Treiber. Though located in the heart of the Silicon Valley, you will hear fervent, old-fashioned revival preaching from the pulpit of North Valley Baptist Church. It is our desire that you will be helped by this gospel message.
It's an amazing thing pastoring this church for these many wonderful years, and to see those people come and stand here tonight, and many others. You're right there, and God has brought us new people, and of course you brought such joy to our life as well. I think we saw a display of the word faithful tonight. Faithful means reliable. It means dependable. I've stood with a lot of these people, many of them, as we buried their loved ones, their husbands or their wives, or sometimes their children and or grandchildren. I've been there. I've heard through many of them that I have diabetes, or I have Parkinson's, or I have cancer. We have shared a lot of joys together. We have shared many tears together. We have built buildings together. We've had obstacles together. We've purchased buses galore together. We've added missionaries. We've raised funds for this church. We established a school together, elementary, junior high, high school, a worldwide missions program, a college together, along with many of you as well. We established a radio ministry and radio stations across the nation now, and also an internet ministry. It's an amazing thing what God has done. It's been done because of the faithfulness of God and the faithfulness of God's people. It's obvious tonight that most of us will not leave a great amount of wealth to our children, though I believe all of us should leave something to our children. We lay up for our children. It's obvious that we will not probably have a lot of money or investments or rental properties. But I'll tell you what these people are going to leave as a heritage to their children and grandchildren, and in some cases great-grandchildren, is the word faithful. I guess if there's one word I would like on my marker, if the Lord would take me home by way of death instead of the rapture, perhaps it would be this word faithful. I'd like to be known he was reliable. He was dependable. I'd like my wife to be able to say he was faithful. I'd like my kids and grandkids to say Nana and Papa were faithful. I'd like this church to say they were faithful together as they served God. I look back at some of my dear, dear friends. I look back at my own pastor and remember standing in his coffin for his funeral and his wife. And I think of Dr. Lee Robertson and his wife Carolyn and their home going, and Dr. Tom Malone and his wife Joyce and their home going, and Harold Seitler and Bobby Robertson's dear wife Jackie, and then at Brother Bobby's service just this last year, Brother Raymond Hancock and his dear sweet wife Nell, and Monroe Parker and his dear wife. I think of Dr. Myron Cedar home and his wife Thelma home with the Lord. And it goes on and on and on of great patriarchs of the faith. Oliver B. Green. Men that have served God, but each and every one have left the testimony they were faithful. I think of that dear layman that bought a brand new Datsun. Brand new Datsun. The summer of 1972, right before we got married. And the first day you had it, Jim Tucker, just an old country boy, and his wife Donna, who took us under their wing and took me under their wing as a single young man and would feed me so many meals a week as I began to serve the Lord at that great Berean Baptist Church. Jim Tucker said, "Jack, you're driving to Tom Harrison's wedding." Brother Tom and I were roommates, and he's been pastoring all these years up in Michigan. Lauren is here in our college. She's out of his church and others. And he said, "I want you to take my car and try that your car won't make it. Of course it won't make it. It was an F-O-R-D. I rest my case. Andrew said, I'm going to have to talk to him tomorrow. I think he cheated today. So it's going to be an interesting day tomorrow morning to hear how the Chevy's won. I'm not sure, Brother Luke. I love you, but I think you must have, where are you? Fudge the story a little bit. I'm not sure. I still think Brother Flood and his wife that are expecting their little baby in November, I still think Flash would be a good name. Wouldn't that be good? Flash Flood Chevy. There you go. Or Flash Chevy Flood. There we go. That's even better yet. And you know, Brother Tucker said, you just take my car. I said, Brother Tucker, you don't even have 50 miles on it. He goes, well, you need a car that runs. You know, I had so many people those days. I could think of when in a widow lady, I stayed up in her attic when we were starting a church in Wisconsin as a college boy. That church is still going to this day. And I thank the Lord for a widow that cared for me and fed me. I thank God for people, my wife's dad's church and our home church. They just were so good to us. Whether it was our wedding or whether it was trying to get into the ministry and serve God. There were people that you consider as faithful people. They were there. They were ready. They're steady. I'm thinking, Mrs. Trevor, Mrs. Strofe, of your brother Rich. Rich is 67 years of age and has only been every day of his, every year of his life, he's only been in one church his entire life. His dad's church, and now his brother, who's 59 years of age, has been his pastor, and his brother's been there for 59 years. Just faithful. A lot of things in life you cannot do and I cannot do. A preacher asked me several years ago, how is it pastoring such smart, intelligent, computer-aged people, people that know the computer? And they said, are you trying to keep up? I said, I have no idea how to use a computer. But my job is not to try to keep up with them with their computer. My job's supposed to be a man of God for the people of God. Yes, you have more smarts to me than I do in those areas, in so many areas. But God's given me a task to know this book and to love these people and to love God's people and to pray for God's people. Acts 6:4, that's my job. And that job, please help me to just stay faithful to the day that God calls me home. I thought so much this week of Sunday school teachers and Sunday school helpers and Sunday school superintendents. They've been faithful, and bus workers and bus captains and bus drivers and bus mechanics that labor in the bus ministry and all the financial supporters that give and sacrifice. And I said to the man up here again, look at those ushers. And up in the balcony, what a sight. That's one of my favorite sights of the week, to see all those ushers down there. Any pastor would kill to have men like that and die for them. My, what a joy. Faithful men of God, laymen that serve God. And then the nursery workers. I think of so many of you elderly ladies now that you barely, and many can't even make it to church now, but you've stayed in the nursery 30 and 35 and more years holding those babies until now it's physically you're not able to do that. And a score of so many of you have done that. I think of tonight the choir and special music and orchestra and instrumentalists that have just been faithful. And tithers and maintenance people and sound ministry people and live stream ministry people and soul winners and staff and deacons. Hebrews chapter 11 gives us an illustration of faithful people, faithful unto death. And many of these die, but they were faithful. Young students in high school and elementary, young students in college, you may not have a church of 30,000. That's not the goal. The goal is that you might stay faithful to one another and faithful to God and faithful to the people that call you pastor and pastor's wife and youth pastor's wife and servant of God. It's required that we become faithful. I want you to see these attributes in Hebrews 11 tonight. Some I'll just mention, others we'll look at the scripture in these brief moments we have left. I want you to know that faithful people, the attributes are always activity. There's always activity. In this text, did you notice that one man was building an ark, and he built it for 120 years. One man was building an altar. One man was going to see God on the mountain and getting the law and bringing it back to the people and organizing a nation. And his picture, if you've ever been at the Supreme Court, his picture, Moses, is right there, considered one of the top 5 or 8 most influential men in world history, Moses from the Bible. He gave us the laws, as so many of our laws of this land are governed by the laws that Moses received from God. What would happen if we get back in this country just to the Ten Commandments? Just to the Ten Commandments. And God said you can govern a nation with those 10. I think tonight of the faithful people like David in the Bible here in Hebrews in chapter number 11. I think of the faithful people that you find that stayed at it, Gideon and Jephthah, verse 32, and Samuel and the prophets. What type of people were they? They're all people that were doing something. Do not come to the point in your life you are saved and you sit. God did not give you a ministry of sitting. May it be said that every child sees a mother serving God, a father serving God, a mother and dad serving God together, a grandma and grandpa, nana and papa, whatever you call one another, that are serving God, faithful, faithful, faithful. God's not looking for talent. God's looking for a man that will day in, day out, week in, week out, drive a bus, sing in a choir, teach a class, lady that'll hold a baby in the nursery, someone that'll care for the ministry. My question, what kind of activity, what type of activity are you involved in today? What are you doing? How are you serving God? You say, Pastor, you're always talking about serving God. Well, get ready next year. I'm telling you right now, 2019, our theme is from Acts 2019, serving the Lord. Serving the Lord. And I'll tell you, 2020 and daily from house to house, I know the next 2 years, the men on the staff, we've prayed over it, we're ready for it, and we are going to be serving God. I believe somewhere from now to then, he'll come again. But if he chooses to tarry, may we be found serving God. Serving God. Activity. God says, be doers of the word and not hearers only. Don't write your resignation. Well, I'm getting old now. Well, finally, you might be able to beat Titus chapter 2, an aged man or an aged lady. Well, I think I'll give it over to the young people. Those 40-year-olds, they're young people. They're not ready. And I know there are things that they can do. But don't cave and don't quit and don't stop. Oh, I remember that so many different men in our church, and they sang in the choir. And different ladies that have sung in the choir. The old building, I can recall my dad standing right there and my mother over there. And they sang in the choir till they could no longer get up in the choir. Almost to the day they could no longer care for themselves. Faithful unto death, Revelation 2:10. Why is there so much quitting? This week, like any other week, we'll receive calls from churches saying, we're looking for a pastor. And my usual response every week, and I know there are some watching by line right now, and you're going to call me and say, where's that church? I'll take it. You're not the one I want to help. You're looking for an opportunity. What are you doing with the opportunity you have? And every week people resigning the ministry, and we have a church building, and we have people, and we have money, and we have ready to meet a pastor's need, but we don't have a pastor. And I always every week say, well, I don't know what to tell you, because our list is depleted. I don't know of a Bible college in America that has them stacked up ready to go. Our graduates they're taken up immediately, way before they graduate. I've had so many pastors call me this summer and said, all of our graduates are taken. They don't last long around here. They're ready to go. They're gone. They're on their way. They've been hired. They're leaving out of here. Thank God for this church, where 61 of our own kids out of our school are in Bible college this year training to serve God. But that's rare. Most churches are not producing the next generation. Maybe it's because they haven't seen a good example. There's activity. I want you to see in verse number 36, an attribute of being faithful is not only activity, but there's also adversity. Verse 36, others had trials of cruel mocking and scourging. Moreover, bonds, imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn asunder, cut in half. Were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented. I do not think lightly of the trial you're going through. But I don't know a family here in America that's had a relative or a husband or a father or a wife or a mother that's been cut in half for the gospel of Christ. I believe the day is coming soon that we will be in bonds. But we still have freedom. And we realize that list there are so many people that are suffering for the cause of Christ. Brother Lawman, you would know the statistics better than I would, Mrs. Lawman from China, but I understand that there's just a slew of so many people that are suffering at the hands of communism right now, dying for their faith, dying for their Christianity. And Iran the same, and Iraq the same, and it's around the globe tonight, of people that are giving their lives for the cause of Christ. There's going to be adversity. We're soldiers of Jesus Christ. We're going to have to beef it up a little bit, get some strength, because we can't quit just because it gets tough. There will be adversity. You might hear the statement, the last lecture. That's a familiar statement that people say will give the last lecture. It's at a university or a college, and they'll write books on the last lecture. And I read the account of a man that's been in my book, in my library. He was 46 years of age. I have the book, The Last Lecture. So one of you gave it to me. And I read it again this week. At age 46, the doctor said, "You'll be dead soon. You have pancreatic cancer. You will not live very long." And as I read that book and I saw the pictures of his one-year-old, Chloe, and his three-year-old, Dylan, and his five-year-old, Logan. And I saw those little kids, and he said, "It pains me to think that my children will not have a father. It pains me to think that I cannot even explain to them and talk to them and get them ready because they're too young to understand." But he asked his wife, "Will you at least allow me, please, to give the last lecture?" It was a lecture of encouragement going on. And he says, "The only thing really I can leave my kids is a heritage of the last lecture." I don't know what you'll face. I don't know what we'll face in the sorrows that are before us. But life is not easy. And the older you get in life, the harder it becomes. Yes, do something for God, activity. But yes, there will be adversity. There will be adversity. But conquer their adversity. The date was July 4th, 1943. We were engaged in what was called World War II. you don't know very much about World War II, I encourage you to become an avid student of it. The world was at war with one another. Sometimes we're thinking that we're living in the very worst time, the most difficult time. But I want you to know, friends, my ministry has never been like Charles Haddon Spurgeon. When the plague swept through London, and literally every day they were having people pulled out of the house and laid on the sidewalks, and the wagons would come by and pick up the boys and the girls and the husbands and the mothers and the wives that have died with the plague. I've read the messages of Charles Spurgeon as he preached that once again this week we have laid many of our own membership to rest because of the plague that swept over London. Somehow that dear man tried to steady that great church, and somehow he kept preaching. Somehow in the midst of it all, he suffered with gout and pain and suffering. At times it got so great, especially in the London fog, the great cold and the dampness, that his deacons would send him to Mentone, France. And in France, he'd be alone. His wife was an invalid in London, and he was over in France trying to get warmth to his body and get strength in his 50s to come back and preach to his people. It was July the 4th in 1943. One of our destroyers was hit. It was torpedoed, and it went down. There's a man on that ship that day. His name was Hugh Miller. 23 men escaped. The rest died. And as they were escaped, he had internal bleeding and he had internal injuries. He was the commander, and he said to the men that were with him as they were in that water now for 2 days, he said, "I'm a drag on you. You'll not make it if you continue to wait on me. I order you to leave me. I order you to leave me." He took his boots off, he took his gear off, realizing that just in a short time he was going to die. Hugh Miller. You talk about adversity. Out in the water by himself in the Solomon Islands. He went another 2 days and was in and out delirious. He prayed, "Oh dear God, somehow send me some water." And it rained so heavy that night, and he would try to collect it as he could with a hat, whatever else he had on, and he would then try to suck on his shirt with the water that had rained on him, getting nourishment. To his amazement, 11 days later, he found himself on the shore, only to discover the Japanese were waiting for him. He came in by cover of night. He hadn't eaten now for 2 weeks. He was very weak in these internal injuries. He was pulling his body around. And he went into the jungle for the first time. He saw coconut. He took his knife and he cut that coconut open. And he began to eat for the first time in several weeks. That night he listened to the enemies as they were walking back and forth. The next day he stumbled upon a soldier that had been killed. He took his boots and put his boots on. He took his grenades and grabbed those grenades and took them with him. The next night during the war that ensued that night, and they were gunning on a ship from the United States was out at the Solomon Islands. And Hugh that night out of the clear blue sky, I mean, no, nobody saw it coming. They had the ship out there, but he was nearby, and he would take that grenade one by one, and he destroyed an entire group of men that were fighting against the Americans. It's an amazing feat. The next day he went to their bodies, found some ration, found some more grenades, And the next night they went through the same scenario, and there he was again behind enemy lines. And that man lived for 43 days in that condition. He was rescued by the Americans. He went on to live to tell the story. I'm telling you tonight, there will be adversity. You'll go to the mission field, young people, and you'll experience malaria. Brother Rick Martin, our missionary, has experienced malaria scores of times. That feeble little body of his is wrapped up inside of it as a man of God, a great preacher of the gospel, 138 pounds of them. 10,000 people in church this morning, 16 Bible, over 1,000 churches established from his ministry, reaching the Filipinos for Jesus Christ. It's been a life of adversity. It's been a life of hardship. But what a man of God. I want to say tonight, there ought to be activity. There will be adversity, and there will be adversity. I think I'll close here tonight. There'll be ancestral heritage. What do we mean by that? Do you know in the Bible, every person always looked to another person? We look to God, yes. But Elisha had Elijah. And Samuel had Eli. And John the Baptist had Jesus. And Isaac looked to Abraham. And as you go through the scripture, you find that Jacob looked to another, and Joseph looked to another. And throughout the Bible, you find that each one saw someone else who had set the bar of faithfulness. I hope it's many years from now. One day, if the Lord tarries, this old body is going to say it has nothing left in it. And I hope I can leave a heritage of faithfulness to these teenagers and children. I hope they'll say one day, the old man used to come to elementary chapel every Wednesday. The old fella came to high school chapel and came to all of our games to watch us play. He was the big cheerleader out there. He was the one that cheered us on. I'd hope they'd say in college that was the old fella that he gave his heart to us and tried to get us prepared for serving God. I hope the members of the church say he wasn't much of this or this or this, but the man was faithful. It is required that we be found faithful. And may we say tonight that all of these in this text tonight, they all had the joy of looking back to someone else that set the example. Dad, you're so important. Father, dads, we have all failed, and we've disappointed ourselves, and we live with the regrets. And dear ladies, the same. I know no one's perfect. I know that, especially I know it about me. But one thing every person in this room can do, you can be faithful. We can be reliable. We can be dependable. Just day in and day out. The Bible says in verse number 38 of these faithful people, of whom the world was not worthy, they wandered in deserts, mountains, and dens, caves of the earth. The world was not worthy. I've preached up in that upper peninsula of Michigan. It's beautiful. Some of you live from there, and you're here from our Bible college. It's a beautiful area. There was a 71-year-old man one day that he and his grown son were out hunting. And they got home from hunting that night. And the boy said, Dad, I left my axe out there. He said, well, it's too late to go back, just down the road. Tomorrow, I'll just make the short little mile or two journey where we were out, and I'll go get the axe. Went to get the axe, and as he picked it up, soon it dropped out of his hand, and a black bear came face to face with him. He could not run. That bear began to attack. Somewhere along the line, Art said this, "I'm going to have to fight if I'm going to live." He was no match, that 71-year-old man who had heart trouble. He was no match for a big old bear like that. But as the bear would come and lunge at him and paw at him, he'd fight back. It was blow for blow. The bear pinned him up against a tree. He was now bleeding from his legs and his chest and his back and his arms. He had no strength hardly at all, this 71-year-old man. That bear sunk his teeth in his shoulder. He said, "My only hope, I've got a 2-inch pocket knife. And my only hope with my other hand is to take it out and open that blade and somehow, God, allow me to hit his eyeball. I want to live. God, give me 1 bit of strength that I can use it one last time." He pulled that knife out. And Art took that knife and he made a stab in the dark. And by the grace of God, he hit him right in the eye. Blood went everywhere and blood's on him now. And here he is. The bear ran off. He pulled himself back to the truck. Only to realize that somewhere in the midst of the fight, he lost his keys. He drug his body through the woods and to the main road and down that road. Well, it was not traveled very much, and he came crawling back home just about the mile or two. They took him to the hospital. He lived thereafter. I'm glad I have so many heroes in my life. I don't want to change what they gave me. They fought bears. They fought lions. They fought compromisers. I'm so tired of compromise. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of our boys and girls getting hijacked by compromise. I'm tired of our college students being always attacked by compromise. And I know you're listening right now. I'm talking to you, my dear brother. I'm tired of it. Get your own kids and corrupt them. Don't try to corrupt ours. I thank God for this place that stands for old time religion, where men look like men and ladies look like ladies, and men have the courage and women have courage, and we sing songs and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in our heart to God. I thank God what's been passed down for us. Therefore, let's be faithful with it. Don't corrupt it. Fight a bear if you have to. Fight a soldier and live 43 days without anything. But give your best so that one day, Amy and Heather, I'll never forget your dad's funeral. I just lost him right now, right there. It's coming up on his anniversary, November the 8th, when Dr. Wally Davis was taken home to be with the Lord. I miss that great preacher friend. Brother Davis is about a year younger than me, and age 51, he passed away. I'll never forget going to that hospital. And he said, "Treib, pardon me. The doctor said, I'm not going to make it." You remember, he came back and he had enough strength to preach "All Is Well." I'll never forget the old building, "All Is Well." Last time we heard him preach, he said, "Treib, I want you to come over to the house. I got my funeral planned." That's hard to do with your dear, dear friend. He said, "I'd like the choir to sing, if you'd let them sing." He said, "I hope that I can leave the testimony of, well done, my child. Your race is over." I listened to our choir sing at his funeral. It was difficult. people sang. Preachers filled the old auditorium, just packed it out. God's people did. They flew in, they drove in. We heard the choir sing, "Well done, my child. Your race is over." I miss Wally Davis. But I tell you, one of the joys as I stand at his marker out here in Santa Clara, when you see that granite open Bible on top of his tombstone, they stayed faithful to God till his very last breath. I'm pleading with our church tonight. These are going to be difficult days ahead of us. We might go through civil war in this country. We may go through real hard times. I've not seen the news. But this afternoon I decided to take my phone and I can get some of the news. And had a video, they said they're clawing and gnashing at their teeth with their teeth at the Supreme Court door. I thought it was just a title. Clawing and gnashing their teeth. And I saw it, Brother Art. I saw it. They had their hands like they were clawing on those doors to get in. And gnashing and angry. The battle's not against Republican or Democrat. The battle is against righteousness. And not maybe this case here, but the battle's going to be in righteousness and wickedness. This world wants everything that is anti-God. They'll do what they need to do. They hate God so much.
Thank you for listening to the audio preaching podcast from North Valley Baptist Church in Santa Clara, California, led by Pastor Jack Treiber. For more information about our ministry or to find out how to get in contact with us, visit our website at nvbc.org. May God bless you as you serve Him this week.